The Athletic.
Friday, then it's Saturday, Sunday. What? Yeah, Watford won, baby. 2-0 at home to Reading on a Friday night. And, well, I think I'm there. I'm not going to say it out loud, but I think I am there. My name is John. Welcome to From the Rookery, a podcast brought to you by The Athletic. With me this evening is Colin.
Don't worry. I think John may have had a beer, one or two beers during the game. He's very, very excitable. So we look forward to that.
Yeah. Okay. And Jason's here.
Good evening.
And still at Vicarage Road, or outside Vicarage Road now, is Mike Parkin.
Yeah, I've come to where we usually record when we're together. I'm feeling a bit melancholy, actually. Stood here outside the Hornet shop on me Jack Jones, recording from the Rookery Inn. So, and sad to be doing it without you chaps, but very, very pleasing to do it on the back of what was an incredible result, really, all things considered, I thought.
Yeah, well, it started off brilliantly. You know, as we know, Watford won 2-0. The goals came fairly early on. In fact, they came so quickly, the WhatsApp threw me off a little bit. Because that was Watford's 53rd point that we've earned at home this year. And also, of course, 20 clean sheets. That's absolutely remarkable. And we currently sit 12 points. Yes, 12 points. Count them, please. Clear of third place. Forget about that games in hand, all the rest of it. But we are comfortable at the moment. Yeah, those first two goals came within minutes of each other. First one, 11 minutes, from the right-hand crew doing their thing, Ismail Azar and Kiko Saar, scoring with his left foot. And then literally minutes later on the WhatsApp group, it said, "Oh my God." And I thought, oh, it wasn't that good a goal, DCW. He sort of sent that, and then boom, thanks to the lovely delay that we have watching these games on whatever streaming service you're using, he stuck in another one, this time with his left foot. It was a cracking start, Mike, with tempo and energy, which is exactly what we needed to see after the last two games, wasn't it?
Yeah, the game had tempo and energy. It was a very, very frenetic entirety of the first half. And yeah, I didn't feel for Reading at all. I was going to say, I felt a little bit sorry for Reading there. Their game plan up in smoke. They would have watched, you know, Middlesbrough do a fairly decent job of gumming up the right-hand side and stopping what you rightly refer to, John, the Kiko and Sarso down the right. And within the space of, well, 90 seconds, really, that had completely gone up in smoke, hadn't it? They, you know, and that's the difference. That's Watford have got the quality. And two absolutely blinding finishes from Ismail Assar. And Watford were off to the races, really, weren't they? And you expected sort of the rest of the second half to continue in that pattern for a couple of minutes after those goals. And Reading looked a little bit shell-shocked, as well they might. But they came roaring back into it, I must say. But yeah, credit to Watford for getting those. We all said it. We've said it. Everything that one of the best things about Watford's performances in the last couple of months has been those quick starts and those early goals. And once Watford go ahead, it undoes the opposition, doesn't it? Because their plan will be to keep it tight as long as we can, and then we can either hit them on the break or whatever. And when Watford get ahead, they tend to stay there, don't they? And to get those two quick fire goals in such a massive, massive game with our rivals watching on, undoubtedly on Sky in their team hotels, was a monumental statement. The perfect start and great for Ismail Assar to get them, because a confident Ismail Assar is an unplayable Ismail Assar. So yeah, brilliant start.
Jason, what did you take from that Watford start of the game from Watford?
You said on the WhatsApp, didn't you, John, about you were looking for more intensity in the performance. And I don't know if it was more intense or just the way we pressed was smarter, and the way we got in the faces of Reading was smarter, certainly at the start of the game. And I think you're talking about the goals. The first one came with a bit of patience. We sort of sucked them in, and then it was a sort of long ball down the right-hand side that sort of set Saar and Kiko free. Not the intensity, the intention to attack and to go direct, and it's the first goal. And then, of course, the second one came from, won the ball high up the pitch, and obviously Saar did the business from there. So we're going to talk about Reading later, I'm sure. I didn't think we were as intense as they were, but I think we were smarter in the way we addressed the situation and the way that we created our own level of intensity.
Yeah, because Colin Reading, you know, there was, I can't remember who said it on Twitter, someone said, you know, they cheered that first half whistle at the end of the first half like it was the end of the game, because it did feel like we were under a lot of pressure. Were you really worried in that first half, Cole?
Not really, because yes, they created some chances. They carved us up a couple of times. But what I really like about the way we're playing at the moment is the commitment to both attack and defence. So when we're attacking, we commit players forward, we take that risk, we're ambitious, we try to get men in the box. Both goals came from a kind of overload down that right-hand side. Obviously, the skill and talent of Saar to finish those two from quite acute angles, really. Not the one on his left foot, he was more central, but, you know, really, really good goals. But then we're also really committed in our defence. It is, you know, if we were to look at individuals, you would have to say that that Truce de Kong, his value to the side is there's a net credit in that he's a good leader and that he organises things well. But there are things about his game which do literally make the hairs stand up on the back of your neck, because occasionally, more than occasionally, frankly, he does pass the ball basically to the opposition in dangerous areas.
You do say that he did that, Colin, but I think there were several across the whole team.
We were suddenly under the cosh. And I have to say, I do think that this Reading performance is probably the best performance by an opposition team that I've seen against us. Even, as Mike said, they roared back after 5 minutes of like, oh, we weren't expecting to be 2-0 down. But they really did roar back. And of course, they've got, in many ways, at 2-0 down, they've got nothing to lose. But they've got real quality in that side at times. And they did create good chances. They just weren't able to take them. And part of that is the absolute joy of watching Watford defend when we are under the cosh. So you see Hughes come back. In the second half, we saw Zinchenko try to get his head on a ball, which almost took his head off from a cross where he was in the opposition box. And a minute later, he's nicking the ball off the right winger in our own box. And we seem to have that collective spirit that we put bodies in front of the defender. They recycled the ball in front of our goal a few times, Reading, just looking for that little yard of space, that little moment where they can get their shot off. But every time they tried it, there was another Watford body in front of them. Although it wasn't fun to watch that last 30 minutes of the first half, because you were thinking, oh God, if they get one, you know, everyone knows the cliche about a 2-0 lead. You know, if you concede a goal, suddenly the momentum switches, especially if it happens before half time. And they weren't really able to take their chances, and that seemed to send them in. And they didn't look quite the same team when they came out second half.
I think that's a really valid point that Colin makes. And quite frankly, I get a little bit hysterical sometimes watching Watford.
I'm no. one Hang on, let me flick through the WhatsApp group. Yep, yep, yep. Over the top. Yeah, carry on, Michael.
and watching it, as Colin rightly said, was tough. And I think there's a number of things about it. One, I think probably the biggest thing about it was that teams just haven't done that to us. Certainly not at Vicarage Road. And I would count Brentford and Norwich in that. The way they sort of stepped up the pace, and Colin's also right to say they had nothing to lose, really. At 2-0 down, the game plan was out the window. They are desperate for the points as much as we are. So they had to go for it, and go for it they did. And I just thought the way they sliced through our midfield was sort of jaw-dropping, really. And they sort of seemed to make it into our penalty box at will. And, you know, I was saying at half time, you know, it's an absolute miracle that Reading haven't scored, and we could have even been level. But hearing Colin talk there and just having given myself a little bit of time to calm down and think about it during the second half, Colin's absolutely right, because what Watford did was that they hung on in there in the face of what was an incredibly impressive performance from really talented players, you know, Tricky, Pacey, Strong. You know, they were leaving us in midfield for dust at times. But what Watford actually did, despite us being our own worst enemy a couple of times, you know, the Truce de Kong ball, and you know, they should have scored, but they didn't. And that is in great part down to Watford's commitment to this defensive unit and how tough they are to score against. John said at the top, you know, how many clean sheets? 20 clean sheets. It's unheard of for Watford. I probably, before John said that, I would have hazarded a guess that we haven't gone 20 clean sheets in my entire career watching Watford. So to do it in a season really is monumental. And I think it speaks to the less of sort of Reading's inability to finish and more Watford's attitude back there to protect that clean sheet. You know, Backman clearing out, still barking orders from minute zero to minute 96 as it was today. And I think we have to give Watford real credit, because that, you know, a couple of times teams have turned up and quite frankly they haven't been much cop. You couldn't level that accusation at Reading today, and Watford really had a job on in that first half to protect that lead, and they did it. And I think at the time I was feeling a little bit critical. There were probably a little bit sloppy, some misplaced passes, but they went in having protected that lead and then went on to the second half to really close the game out. But the fact they hung in there in that first half sort of tirade, it was quite astonishing at times, but they did it, and I think that is massively impressive. Huge credit to everyone involved to get us in at 2-0.
It's quite easy to look at a games and say, oh, we hung on in the last 10 minutes, but actually hanging on in that first half could easily be the best hanging on of the entire season. Second half though, Jason, it wasn't exciting. The first half was like, oh man, the Championship. If you're watching this game, you know, if anyone's watching the Wolves Fulham game, I'm sure it was a lovely Premier League game, but people would have been switching over to watch the first half of Watford against Reading. Didn't quite get in the second half in terms of the spectacle, let's say. But the second half, we saw a substitution. We saw Sanchez come on for an injured, not how badly, we're not sure at the moment, and Nathaniel Chalobah. But Will Hughes in that second half, and yeah, in fact, the whole game, he was much more in control of that game, Jason, wasn't he? And playing a little bit further forward in the second half.
Yeah, he did. Obviously, Sanchez came on, so he was given the deeper role. I think, yes, it was, you say, the entertainment value perhaps wasn't as much in the second half, probably down to a couple of things. We've talked about Reading. They spent a lot of energy in that first half, playing the way they did. They had guys like Ejaria and Olise did a lot of running with the ball, but there was a lot of sort of give and goes, working through the lines, up the pitch, which takes a lot of energy. And I think that probably sucks a lot out of them as well. But also, we controlled the game a lot better. There was a lot less of the sloppy passes. Hughes, obviously, a part of that, but also Sanchez, who came on, a big part of that as well. He did that thing where his first touch in the game is a poor one. His second touch is a tackle. Got that out of the way straight away at kickoff. and then after that, he was, as we've seen him to be, just sort of very calm on the ball and sort of playing. I'm not sure if he's played that sort of deeper role. When he's come on before, he's played in front of Hughes. This time he's playing deeper, but we saw a lot from him in terms of his tackling, his willingness to sort of scrap a bit as well. I think there was a header early on that he went up for and won very, very strong in the air, something we haven't seen from him as much, I don't think, so far. So yeah, I think we, with that substitution, forced as it may have been, we seemed to gain a bit more control. Passing was better. Hughes up top and his energy was better. Sanchez sitting, maybe not better than Hughes, but was a commanding presence between defence and the more advanced players.
Colin, you were impressed by Sanchez?
I was really impressed by him. I might put something on the WhatsApp group when the change was made, and he said, well, he won't be worried about this lot. And that proved to be absolutely true. He seemed very comfortable when he came on. And also, you know, when you've got a 2-0 lead against a team that has tried very hard to get, you know, the first goal back, you come out in the second half, if you can slow that tempo down, gain control of the ball, take some of the sting out of their running and take some of the sting out of their intensity and make them play at the tempo you want them to play at, then you can take control of the game. And I think Sanchez was a big part of that. The other player I thought in the second half that emerged from quite a poor first half was Zinchenko. In the first half, he got booked. He looked like a man looking for his second booking, running around the pitch saying, where's my second booking? I want to get sent off.
He looked out of it. He looked slow, like he couldn't keep up with the game.
Yeah, he couldn't keep up with the game. Wasn't able to think quick enough. So he was finding himself slightly out of position, which is when you get those kind of lunge tackles when you're trying to make up for it. But then in the second half, and I don't know whether it was because Sanchez came on and Hughes went up to sort of join him a bit more, that he suddenly just sort of found his feet. I think Zinchenko is clearly quite an intelligent man from when you've seen him interviewed. Intelligent man, an intelligent footballer. And I think he must have sat down in that half-time and thought, this is not who I am. I'm something a bit different from that. And I thought he came on and showed a much better side to his play in the second half. He got into some quite dangerous positions. He was linking up with the strikers quite well. He wasn't lunging in. He didn't look like a man who was going to get a second booking. So when you see that, those kind of little things, you think, God, this team is just so good on detail. They didn't come out and just defend on the 18-yard line as a way of stopping Reading. They didn't come out and just throw the kitchen sink at Reading trying to get a third goal. They just made little changes all over the pitch, which just really, this time, really worked. And I think Sisko has to be given some credit for that, because in terms of in-game management, we have not been critical of him, but sometimes he has seemed a bit slow to react, made substitutions that we think was a bit late. You know, how can that player influence the game? But today, making that decision to take Chalobah off, however, you know, he must have been injured, obviously, but to bring on Sanchez, to change the formation slightly, to give Zinchenko that confidence, to just, for him as an individual, just to take control of himself and play better. It sounds sort of, you know, kind of simple and stupid in a way, but just to play better in the second half, to make better choices, to make sure his decision-making is on point, rather than throwing himself around the pitch, trying to keep up with a game that admittedly in the first half was played at 120 miles an hour, and in the second half was played at sort of 60 miles an hour. So it was maybe a bit easier for him. But all in all, I thought our reaction to being 2-0 up, our reaction to that last 20 minutes in the first half, 25 minutes, where we were really at times slightly overrun. And yes, great to see the commitment of the whole team getting back and defending and throwing themselves in front. One, two, three players getting in between the ball and the goal. But the reaction to come out in that second half and really take the sting out of them. And they did seem to tire. The last 5 or 6 minutes, they kind of perked up again and they got a couple of chances. But they did seem to slightly lose their momentum and we slightly wore them down. And you could see their heads just drooping a little bit, thinking we're never going to score against this lot. And that's so good.
Those boys came on and they took responsibility. Zinchenko had a massive, massive job to do, because I think Chalobah was probably taken off because of a knock. So Sanchez came on and, as you've all said, was absolutely brilliant. And in what you might not have seen on the TV was he was barking orders and organising the team. He was very, very vocal, using all that experience to make sure that everyone was doing their job. And Zinchenko had a very, very difficult first half, didn't he, for the reasons we said. And for him to come back in the second half and sort of walk that tightrope of being on a yellow card, you know, Reading with all their tricky players driving forward, they were still making inroads. It would have been easy, but he really took responsibility, I felt, and that speaks volumes about him, speaks volumes about Sanchez, but I think it speaks volumes about the squad. That's why they're getting these results, because they're taking responsibility for their own performances and each other's. They're looking out for each other and they're stepping up when we need them to. And we needed them all to do that today. Even down to we'll talk about the subs later, I'm sure, but even when Isaac Success came on, he was strong and he was tough and he won balls in the air and he just did what he had to do. And I think that's particularly impressive for Zinchenko. That won't be his favourite game in a lot of ways. You know, he had a couple of chances later on, didn't he, in the second half. Certainly one where it came to him on his left and it went over. But for him to sort of maintain the discipline and just to get his nut down and get through the game and help Watford get through the game, I think is massively impressive. And he can take a lot of credit for that and agree with everything you said about Sanchez. John, I just wanted to ask you, you talked about Zinchenko struggling to get up to pace. How did it feel watching it on the TV in that first half? Because for me, that was probably the most entertaining half of football we've seen at the Vic this season. And it just felt, the word I use is frenetic. And I just wondered how you felt like watching it at home.
It did, and I think I have that, shall I call ahead to you, Michael, where, and maybe I don't see all the terrible that's going on. But for him, like I said, the thing I saw why, you know, I say he was off the pace was because of, one, he had already got a yellow card. Maybe my senses were heightened. And every time he sort of, it was almost like, was he really going for a tackle? Was he just late for a tackle? And it was, we're waiting for the red card to come out, or the second yellow to then get his red. He just wasn't quite doing his defensive duties properly, and maybe I was just, you know, you say about, you know, the games he's played, this is probably the fastest paced game he's been part of. Many of the games we play aren't played at this high speed, and so maybe it's showing him something. And you know, everything that we've learned, we'll speak to Jacob later about the interview that he did with them for WD18. Adam did a lot of background on him, speaking to the people who know him best, and he seems to be the man who can sort himself out and is a serious footballer. So he's gone in at half time. I mean, we did see Cisco sort of saying, "Oi, watch a yellow" to him in the first half. But he's then come out the second half and shown improvement. It would have been nice to be a little bit better when he had that one-on-one with the goalkeeper, you know. I think it's the attitude, as we've already said, like that we saw in him that really excites me, that makes me not worry, I suppose, in the games that we've got coming up. The other one who needs a big props, Colin. We don't talk about him a huge amount because we do talk about how great the defence is. But Barkman made some absolutely tremendous saves when he needed to today.
Yeah, I mean, I think we do need to talk about Daniel Barkman. He's played, what, I think now 20 games, is that right? Something along those lines. Defensively, interestingly, they showed a stat on the TV. I think we're first in all of the major kind of stat areas for being defensive. Most clean sheets, least goals conceded, and all those sorts of stats that they throw up on the telly. And I think we have to look at Backman and say, well, yes, we like Serralta. He's come into the team. He's playing very well. William Troostekong has his real qualities. Messina and Kiko obviously are good defenders, and they get helped out by people like Hughes coming back. But very quietly, he's kind of crept up on me, Backman, because mostly, you only notice a goalkeeper when they either do something extraordinary defensively or when they make a mistake. And he hasn't really done either of those things in his time in between the sticks for us. He's been quite calm. He's quite efficient. He's neat and tidy. He comes for the high ball well. He's a decent shot stopper. He occasionally has moments of genius with distribution. He had one tonight where he threw the ball and, you know, we're over the halfway line in seconds with Semmer on it. I think it was Semmer. And so his vision, his reflexes, his quickness to react and read the game. And he's just growing, and you can sort of see him growing. I mean, I don't know how you feel, but when I look at him in the goal now, he looks actually a bit taller and a bit bigger than he did when he first started playing for us regularly. And I think that's a confidence thing. He's clearly a confident man. He hasn't had a poor performance, which would have maybe knocked his confidence and set him back a little bit. He's gradually improved. It's clear that the defenders trust him, that he's very vocal, as far as I can tell, from what Mike has said and what you can sometimes hear on the TV. He seems to be commanding that box. He's taken his chance, which is not easy as a goalkeeper because, you know, we change our fullback. We don't even think about it, do we? Oh, there's been three changes today. Ngaki has come in for Kiko at right back. No one bats an eyelid. But you don't rotate your goalkeepers like that. It just doesn't happen in football. And I ask myself the question, why is that? Why don't we do that? You know, why don't we have a keeper that we think is better for this game or better for that game? But we just don't do it. So you have to sit and be patient and wait for your chance. And he did that. Unfortunately for Ben Foster, he broke his fingers, couldn't play. Backman's come in and he's just said, that is my shirt. And this is my defence. And this is my goal. And no one is going to score. And, you know, he's done it, as far as I can tell. I thought he was terrific tonight. The last save, the save in the last minute. I mean, yeah, he got down fast. He didn't just save it. He held it. You know, it's just massively important.
And what's important about that, it was the 88th minute. But actually, at that stage, there was still 6 minutes of injury time. So there was 8 minutes to go. So if that could have easily squirmed under his body. I think it's especially impressive when you don't have lots of saves to make in the game. You know, sometimes with sport, you get on a roll, don't you? And, you know, if you're swinging a golf club nicely, you feel comfortable walking up to the next one. If you're playing cricket, all that sort of stuff. I mean, you don't have to make saves when you're not palming it away or catching it very often. To get that sort of reaction and to get down and not just push it out into the path of an on-rushing striker, but to actually to hold on to it, you know, with almost 10 minutes of the game to go, it's a bit of a curveball, the fact that it happened in the 88th minute. There was a big portion of the game to go. And Reading weren't backward in coming forward with who they had on the pitch in terms of attacking options, were they? So
no, they weren't.
Absolutely vital.
There's one more thing about Backman that I've noticed, particularly tonight, that I quite like. And that's how we get him involved when we're looking to play the ball out of defence as well. And when you've got a team like Reading that are going to push you, that they are going to push your centre-backs when you're trying to play out, they then got Backman as another option to pass the ball to. and he looks quite comfortable. And like Colin said, you soon notice a goalie if he makes mistakes. And while some of our players on the pitch and some of our defenders were a bit sloppy in giving the ball away, I don't think we had a single mistake in that regard from Backman tonight. And again, the defenders, when you've got a goalkeeper that's good and doing that and comfortable on the ball, then your defenders are going to be more than happy to use him in that regard. And it just gives you almost an extra player on the pitch in your passing moves to play out of defence.
For me, if Will Hughes isn't the best central midfielder in the Championship, then I don't know who's better than him. Because, again, tonight, I just thought he was imperious. You know, he just always seems to be available to get the ball. He's always calm. He never panics. He never rushes. He's got the ball. He can recycle it. He can get it back. He's just, for me, he is Watford at the moment. He's the reason that we've won these games. He's the reason that we're able to attack opposition and defend equally as well against them when they get on top of us. There's just something about this man. You know, he's quite slight. He's not big physically. He doesn't have a loud voice. He's not a big personality. And yet he utterly dominated that midfield for most of the game tonight. And sometimes you look at him and you think, how are you doing it, Will? How, Mr. Hughes, I should call him, Sir Hughes. But I mean, how is he doing it? He, as I say, he's slight of build. He's not pacey. You know, you can. He reminds me of some of those. And maybe this is a bit hyperbolic, but you know, he does remind me of some of those Spanish midfielders who were not big men, who were small men, but they were skillful, but they weren't pacey. But he just protects the ball. He loves the ball. He looks after the ball so well. He was borne down on by a couple of Reading midfielders at one point tonight. You know, much bigger than him, snapping and snarling, trying to get the ball off him. And he's like water. You know, you can't tackle water. So for me, he's really impressing me at the moment. He's really the central core of why I think this team is doing so well, because the rest of the team know they can rely on him. And he's in that key position right in the centre of the park. He's always got his head up. He hardly ever gives the ball away, hardly makes mistakes. He can always find a man. He can keep the ball long enough till he gets himself an option. And there's just something that I absolutely love watching this man play football. And I'm delighted that he's playing for us.
My favourite moment, apart from the goals, was there was a tackle just in front of the home dugout. And it was one of those that it feels like the entire earth is going to split down the middle. The two guys just arrived at exactly the same time at 100 miles an hour. Both caught their side of the ball perfectly. Thunderous challenge. It reverberated around Vicarage Road. And for a split second, you wince. Because you think, oh my God, someone's foot is going to fall off, or you know, that's going to shatter someone's shin. But Will Hughes, and as Colin rightly sort of articulated there, he does look slight. Got up, smiled, laughed, patted the bloke on the bum, and ran off.
That was a moment, yeah, I saw that as a moment.
And that just sums him up. He never hides. No. He's skillful, just everything that Colin said. But that moment, just I thought, summed him up perfectly. Just a quick question for you lads before we put the game to bed. A little question about Ken, because for me, he looked a little bit out of sorts tonight. I think he's a great outlet on the left, and I think he does a great job as almost as a foil for our dream team, really, down the right, aren't they? Because we know if Ken Semmer does get the ball, and the opposition will know that if Ken Semmer gets the ball, he is more than capable of hitting the byline, getting a decent crossing. He's done it a lot this season. But I think he's looked like he's struggling to me. I didn't think he had his best game on Monday, and he looked a little bit off the pace tonight as well. He sort of a couple of poor decisions. So I don't know, maybe Jace, what... Is there a need, perhaps, or do we just keep going at this stage? But how do we give Ken a rest, maybe, without disrupting the balance? Or do we even need to? Am I being sort of overly pernickety and to Kelsey's negative?
Yeah, I wouldn't change it at this stage. It was a tough one for him tonight. And again, you probably need to give Reading a bit of credit. He was up against Yeardom, who had a pretty good game for them. Didn't quite get his moment. I thought his best moment, actually. I thought he was a bit unlucky. I think there was a moment in the second half where he seemed to ping between two defenders and looked like he was going to be away. But I think the ball had come up and hit his hand. Don't think you can fault him for effort. I think that's still there. I think there's still a willingness to give 100% and try his best for the team. It's not quite happened for him in the last couple of games. I think his defensive duties are still been okay. I thought we... of the, I talked about the guys, the sort of the three behind Puskás that were doing a lot of running off the ball, running with the ball, particularly in the first half. I thought Ken and Messina between them coped pretty well and probably better than we did defensively against the other two of those Reading players. I wouldn't sort of chuck baby out with the bathwater at this stage. I don't think there's any need to make a change. Let's give him another go. It would just seem a bit churlish to make that change at this stage.
And I'm really against making changes, just because we're in a position this season with all the substitutes that we can make, is that if you keep his positivity for himself by being a starter, you can substitute people on for him. And we've got plenty of substitutes, you know, compared to previous years, especially compared to when we first started watching football. So I'm not that worried about him. And I think I would continue to start them all. Even João Pedro, you might even start putting into that category a little bit. He's not quite shining as much as he has been the last couple of games. But I still would start him. I wouldn't just put Isaac Success on to start instead of Pedro just because you can. It's about making sure that team, that togetherness, which is still the worst word ever. I can't think of a different one, though. That togetherness that we have. Unity that we have is the most important thing to keep hold of, and that's why I don't think I would necessarily make any change to that starting 11 next week.
From the Rookery End, a podcast about life following Watford FC.
It's 8 days before the next Watford game, so how are you going to fill your time with that as a Watford fan? Well, first of all, we'll be probably doing another podcast in the middle of the week, talking to Adam about what he's seeing, what he's hearing about what's going on at Vicarage Road. Because as the Athletic's Watford correspondent, you can read all his articles at theathletic.com. And if you haven't subscribed yet, it currently costs you £3.99. That's a 40% discount for your first 6 months. So if you go to theathletic.com/rookeryend, you can sign up now for a subscription. But also, of course, there are many other podcasts out there where you can listen to. Just have a search for a Watford podcast. I'm sure will come up, and I'm sure some other ones as well. So give them a listen. But of course, you should also check out a thing called YouTube. We've talked about video. We're just a little bit old, and we need to figure out how to use those clever filters before we head down that road of doing video on From the Rookery Inn. But I caught up with Jacob Culshaw, someone who you've probably come across in your time as Watford fans, to talk to him about a series of interviews that they've been doing over the last couple of months with some Watford players. And of course, you can watch those videos by going to youtube.com, just looking for WD18 on YouTube. He talked to me about the four interviews he's done recently with current members of the Watford squad. Jacob, you had the luck of talking to many Watford players recently. You've spoke to Joseph Hungbo, a youngling. I can't call him an oldling because he's younger than me, but Tom Cleverley, and also one of the new boys in Philip Zinkernagel. They're all available on your YouTube channel. What was it like? You know, we talked before about the Daniel Barkman interview you did a few months ago, but you know, seeing those as a three as a whole, in terms of those interviews you did, what did you get as a Watford fan speaking to those boys?
Yeah, I think the first thing, John, is it was actually quite surreal, really, speaking to the Watford players. I haven't had the experience of doing it before, but I think the nice thing about all three of them, there was a contrast between the three that you mentioned. First off was Philip Zinkernagel, PZ7 as we call him, and he does like the nickname. Honestly, really, really chilled guy, a cosmopolitan outlook on life, very chilled. He said his inspiration growing up was James Bond and David Beckham, and you can certainly say he's got the looks for it. But I think the contrast particularly with Philip was because we didn't know a lot about him before we joined Watford, joining from Bodø and Glimt in January. It was nice to actually just ask him, who is he? What's his personality like? Well, that's the thing. We didn't know. We'd heard all these things about him at Bodø and Glimt with the goal contributions, and I think he was sixth in Europe for goals and assists. And there was this big kind of tag with him with the fans. Oh, this guy's got to hit the ground running. But to learn about his personality off the pitch was fascinating, actually. And yeah, very chill guy, very cool, great sense of humour. You can tell with the lads and what we see on social media, they've taken to him straight away. And he said, as a number of players have, William Troost-Ekong is one of his best mates at the football club, and he's been a big influence on him. That was then followed by a chat with Tom Cleverley, and as you mentioned, he's one of the more experienced players at the club, obviously having a spell in the 09-10, and we touched a little bit on that, on the skinhead Tom Cleverley who burst on the scene, about that, obviously, that Lloyd Doyley goal when he celebrated with the supporters, directing Lloyd over to the family stand. And then we kind of just talked about his return to Watford, maybe some questions about, you know, his favourite moment. There's been a few goals. I think the one that particularly stood out to him was that Crystal Palace goal. I think we all knew as Watford fans him coming back from that Achilles injury, and he scored a brilliant, brilliant goal. And he said the only thing he regrets about that is celebrating at the wrong end. So it was great to speak to Cleves, not only about this season and his role becoming captain and having to step up as captain, but just his time at the football club and that insight into what it's like being an experienced player at Watford, particularly this season. The big thing for me that he mentioned was, since he's been at Watford, this is the most together he has seen a squad, which puts us in good stead going into the last few games of the season. And then just finally, recently we spoke to Joe Hungbo, who again it was a contrast from what we've seen with Cleves, obviously a young player who's burst onto the scene, played a few games off the bench, making his Watford debut, played away at Old Trafford. So there was a unique insight into what it's like being a young player at Watford. But particularly for Joe, who's, you know, Cisco Munoz showed a lot of faith in him, and he referenced how Cisco's really kind of nurtured him and developed his game, because he used to be a winger when he was a professional. And, you know, he was so humble, again, a funny, funny guy, just genuine, and was really happy and excited to be there, which is always nice when you're speaking to someone. Not to say the other two lads weren't, but particularly Joe, you could tell he was really enjoying it. And I think having that rapport with him as a young Watford fan, I'm only 19 and he's just turned 21, to the fact that we were a similar age, meant it was a lovely chat with Joe, and he was really good value and a pleasure to speak to. And fingers crossed we can see more of him in the future.
Yeah, no, that, you know, that's exactly what I sort of got from them all. You know, the fact that, you know, Hungbo seemed to be one of these very determined young men, almost to the point where he said, "Oh, I don't like going out." I'm going, "What do you mean you don't like going out, you weirdo? You need to go out as well as do all this serious stuff." Yeah, Philip, it was great to get to know him just didn't know him at all. And then with Cleverley, it was that sort of confirming of his seniority. Yeah. And the clip, let's play a quick clip of it, where he talks about the big meeting that the senior players called after the Coventry draw.
I wanted to ask you, Tom, about the turnaround in the season, really, because you mentioned Hive Live a little bit earlier, and I think you were on after the game after the Coventry game, and you mentioned in the extra show about how you lads had a team meeting ahead of the Bristol City game. Do you think that was the turning point in the season? Because we've gone on an incredible run since that Coventry game. I think it's 9 wins in 10, 5 on the bounce, obviously, at the moment. Did you feel in the squad at that moment like there was a switch, like we're on it now, automatics are in our mindset?
We don't want to get talking like the job's done yet, but there's certainly been a change since after that Coventry game, and it's definitely been a turning point. 3 or 4 of the senior boys spoke to each other that night, which was pretty much true. Steve Kong really drove that. Maybe you guys wouldn't know that he's a real leader, cares about the club. And he drove that night. And fair play, because the Tuesday morning, we got together, we had a meeting, said what needed saying. And yeah, we were turning against each other a bit in the Coventry game. So since that day, we've had no going mad at each other or trying. It's pure encouragement. Get behind each other, and coincided with, we changed the system to 4-3-3 for the Bristol City game. And since that day, I think we've been a much better team.
How do these things sort of help you with your connection with this team? You know, Jacob, the fact you got to speak to these, again, someone new to the squad, someone young to the squad, someone, you know, well experienced and one of the senior players. How did it make that do you feel after, you know, connecting with them? Because we haven't been able to do it by going to Vicarage Road week in, week out.
Yeah, I think particularly maybe less so with Cleves, because as you mentioned, he's been at the club for quite a while now, and we do know Tom Cleverley really well. He's a fan's favourite. He's a cult hero. Maybe not at the legend status just yet, but he's in that cult hero bracket. But I think with Dan Backman, Philip Zinkenagel, I was going to say PZ7 then, Philip Zinkenagel and then Joseph Hungbo, the great thing about those three guys and the opportunity and the timing of the interviews was they were kind of relatively unknown in the sense that Daniel Backman had just come into the team. We hadn't seen a lot of him before. Philip Zinkenagel had just joined the football club, and Joseph Hungbo's just started to get opportunities at the time of recording. So the great thing about that was I felt, and the kind of the aim of the chats were to get to know them a little bit better, as it says in the title, getting to know, but also give Watford fans the opportunity to get to know them a little bit better. And as you said, just create a bit of a bond and a connection to this team. And particularly those three players, as I mentioned, haven't, you know, they've come in relatively new, and particularly the new signings like Philip. So from my point of view, John, it's made me connect particularly with Philip and Joe and Dan, who have all interacted with our content on WD18. But even from a fan's perspective, to get to know them more as they get more opportunities in this Watford squad was really refreshing and just to know their personalities a bit more, because those three guys, it was a pleasure to speak to them and certainly build up our connection and our rapport with those players.
So with that inside knowledge that you have, are you as a Watford fan, nice, cool and calm, ready for this last 5-6 games that we've got? Because, you know, you've seen what they're like, you know where their head is. You think that they are in the absolutely perfect position to finish this season off.
The Tom Cleverley interview was an eye-opener for me in terms of, as I mentioned just previously, the togetherness in this Watford squad was really refreshing to hear. And he was so complimentary about this squad and the talent that we have and the personalities that we have as well. He's mentioned previously there's been some players who maybe not bad eggs, but certainly maybe put a little bit of a dampener on the mood. He said since after that commentary game, kind of consensus was we be positive. We are positive regardless of the situation and we need to get this team back into the Premier League. So in terms of that Cleverley interview, that filled me with a lot of confidence heading to the last six games of the season, because as we all are, nervous. It's going to be a nervous time. The last six games is, my stomach's already turning thinking about it. But Tom was very confident that we can get the job done, and he was very confident in the group of players that he has. And of course, he's going to say that, but you could really actually tell, even though it was across Zoom and it wasn't in person, that he genuinely believes in this group of players and believes in the manager that we can get this job done and we can get over the line and take the club back to the Premier League. And I think that's just to wrap up on Klebs, that's a burning desire for him. I think it really hurt. There was a few players who were relegated last season, but I think particularly Tom Cleverley, who was hurt by last season's events. And I think he's someone who's absolutely desperate to get this football club back into the top flight. So from that chat alone, I was the confidence levels increased, but of course we're still going to be nervous of Watford fans. This is Watford Football Club after all. Anything can happen. But yeah, we'll have to wait and see.
So do go and check those out on YouTube. They're well worth it. Again, that feeling of feeling a bit closer to the players and understanding them a bit more is something we haven't had this season. Of course, you can also fill your time by reading the latest edition of the Watford Treasury. We've talked about it a lot on this podcast. We're so proud of it. It's an amazing thing that a bunch of Watford fans have put together. It's so unique. And there isn't another magazine like it for any other club in the country. I caught up with the editor, Jeff Wicken, to find out about what's in the latest volume, Volume 7 of the Watford Treasury. Jeff, if anyone hasn't picked up a copy, shame on them. But what is the Watford Treasury?
Well, we bill it as a visual history of Watford Football Club. It's an A4 full-colour magazine. The new issue that just came out this week runs to 128 pages. Includes all sorts of features from all sorts of eras of the club, going back even to the 19th century, in one case in this issue, right through to probably the most recent thing is the 94-95 season, which was Glenn Roeder's best remembered season for Watford, I suppose. Also have a tribute to him, given that he passed away recently.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's the thing about the Treasury. I pick it up and I enjoy learning about Watford history. I think that's something I've got as I've got older in my age. But it's the little nuggets, I think, that you guys have found in the past. It isn't just about the time since Graham Taylor and speaking to those ex-players, which, you know, is part of it. But there's lots of different things you sort of picked up on. You do pick up on that some of 1977 when Graham Taylor turned up and those more modern day, look at me saying modern day when it's in the 90s. But there's one particular one, the brothers Cotha, who turned up, well, quite a while ago and played for Watford.
Yes. I mean, 1898, they made their debut for Watford. And Jack and Edwin Cotha were the first Asian professional footballers anywhere in the world. I would say anywhere in the world, that's because professional football started in Britain. But Jack Cotha in particular who was a sturdy fullback and a great favourite with the crowd at Cassio Road, where Watford used to play, the first Watford player to make 100 appearances for the club as well. So undoubtedly the first player of Asian and specifically Indian heritage to be as successful as he was in the professional game.
And you've got an interview that you've done with someone from the 1950s, Bill Shipwright. It's a name I've heard of, but again, I'm looking forward to reading this because you hear names, but finding out more about them is always quite hard. What can you tell me about that interview? Because how old is Bill? He was a player in the 1950s. How old is he now?
I think he's getting on for 90.
Okay.
But he gave a terrific interview. It was very, very amusing. Lots of good stuff. and I've only used some of it. We showed him a picture, a colourised picture of himself running out at Vicarage Road in the mid-50s. I just asked him to talk about that and captured what he said. One of the things he got onto was how he ended up playing against Stanley Matthews, who was the superstar of the day, in a benefit match when Matthews turned up at Vicarage Road at the end of the season. Bill was actually working in the club office in the afternoons as well. So he said in the afternoon he'd given Matthews his money for appearing in this game. And then in the evening he turned out and was marking him directly. There's a very, very funny tale that he tells of how he dealt with Stanley Matthews by basically putting him on the dog track, coming in at half-time, and the manager saying, if you do that again, I'm substituting you because they've come here to watch Stanley Matthews, not you. And he talks about Matthews only having one trick and how he'd realised what it was and anticipated it and therefore was able to tackle him in robust fashion.
As football was in those days, of course. What else can we get in this this latest volume? I like the fact that it's called a volume. Could you say it's a magazine? I think it's more than a magazine. It's a top quality publication. It's beautiful, as we've said many a time on From the Rookery End. But it's not the edition, it's a volume, isn't it? So this is volume 7. What other things can we look forward to if we get a copy?
Volume 7? Well, I'm just flicking through it now. There's an interview with Tony Marks, who used to run the Hornet shop in the 1980s.
Yes.
Many, including yourself, clearly, John, will look at that very fondly. There's a good piece on the history of greyhound racing at Vicarage Road that ran from the 1920s through to the late 70s, when Graham Taylor decided that it wasn't what he wanted to be going on in the ground. And he himself, there's a very nice feature about the summer of 1977, and how instant his impact was. Tied up around two different away games at Stockport, one in April 1977, the very dog days of the Mike Keane reign, and then Graham's very first match again at Stockport in August 1977, and how different everything instantly seemed to be because his impact was so rapid. The 94-95 season is a lovely piece by Nick Catley, very very well written. It's a very fondly remembered season, right from the very start, when, actually, you may remember Jürgen Klinsmann made his debut in English football at Vicarage Road in a friendly match and then reappeared and scored a hat-trick in a League Cup tie about a month later. That was a fine season. It's fondly remembered by many people and completely forgotten by some others, but Nick's done a really nice job of bringing that to life.
And you can get hold of a copy of the Watford Treasury by going to thewatfordtreasury.co.uk and signing up for one edition or several editions, and they come out 3-4 times a year because they are weighty volumes of a lot of history of Watford, as Jeff was telling us about. So just go to thewatfordtreasury.co.uk to sign up. But of course, when the Hornet shop reopens, you can get one in there. Also, when the Watford Museum opens up, you can get one in there as well. So next week we are playing Luton Town. It's the second time we've played them this season. Jason, I'm going to lie to you. I think I overhyped the first game because it was the first time we played them in such a long time. It wasn't a derby game, and I'm not really hyping myself up for this for next week being a derby game. I'm more hyped about it being another step closer for Watford to get promotion. What about you?
It's big, isn't it? You're not getting hyped up. I'm not getting hyped up yet. I'm probably more concerned about what our rivals are going to do tomorrow. But once that's done, then, yeah, when it gets to Saturday, I think the hype will be there. It is a derby game, and it is a big game in the context of our season. It's an opportunity for them to try and derail what we are trying to achieve. They've got nothing else to play for. They're not going to go down. They're not going to threaten the playoffs. What they've got the chance to do is to stop us from getting automatic promotion or try and put a little dent in that ambition. And they will be up for it. And we need to be up for it as well to combat that. We've been talking about how we get nervous before games anyway. And I find that these Friday night games, I'm not nervous because I'm busy working during the day. And then all of a sudden the game's upon me and I'm sitting down and watching it. And then I'm into the game. It's going to be so different next Saturday. The nerves are going to start from the moment I get up. because I'm just going to be, I don't know, probably pottering around the house doing my chores. But yeah. I'll have a lot of thinking time to think and worry about the game. I am going to be hyped. I am going to be nervous.
Don't worry, Jason. I'll have a word with your girlfriend, Nikki, and make sure she's got a big long list for you to do around the house next Saturday morning.
Thanks.
Colin, how are you ahead of this? Is it more about beating Luton, or is it more about continuing this promotion run?
It's very hard to make it more than just another game for me at the moment. I think if I had a ticket in my pocket which said Kenilworth Road and had that horrible crest in the top left-hand corner and I was going on Saturday, I think I'd feel one, more nervous, two, jolly excited, and three, incredibly determined to make sure we beat them. But with it being just one of these other kind of almost like virtual experiences of watching my team play, it's very hard to put more on it because it's Luton. Yeah, I think I'm more, you know, like all of us, we feel a little bit more focused on, well, three more points, 85 points, you know, if they don't win their games, and Swansea have got to play their pickup game on next Tuesday when we don't play. So by the time we play Luton, we'll know where they are. If they win the next two, then they're, you know, sort of almost back in the hunt. But if they don't, then they're kind of gone. And so there's all these other things swirling around. And the fact that it's Luton, but it's, you know, 7-8 days away, I'm not feeling that burning derby sort of maniacal emotion that I normally feel when we play Luton. So I can't really tell you exactly how I feel about it until we get a bit closer. But it's not feeling like there's more on it than if we were playing some other team, because we just desperately need those 3 points.
Well, I've just spent sort of an hour and a half, hour and three quarters in very, very close proximity to Nathan Jones and Mick Harford. And I can tell you, I am absolutely chomping at the bit to get there, sort that lot out, and carry on our procession back to the Premier League at their expense, knowing full well that at the end of play on Saturday, they could have contributed 6 valuable points to Watford Football Club's return to the Premier League. I am absolutely desperate for us to go there and just sort them out. They are an inconvenience. We need to treat them as such and just turn up, sort them out and get home.
Is that what Mick Harford does to you, Mike?
Do you know what? I've got a soft spot for Mick Harford, actually. He's good mates with Tony Coton, isn't he? And anyone that's good mates with Tony Coton is all right for me. But when you see it, you know, he will want, as much as I want, or any of us want to beat Luton, he will want Luton to beat Watford. They will absolutely, you know, all joking aside, they will be so, so up for this. Because, as Jason said, they have got an opportunity to be a real fly in the ointment, to make life difficult. It will be robust, shall we say. I'd expect some serious challenges to be flying in. Nathan Jones was very critical, wasn't he, after the game at Vicarage Road, saying how it didn't feel like a derby. It felt like no one turned up. Well, it was his lot, really, that didn't turn up, because Watford sort of won it at a canter, didn't they, really? And the only real flashpoint was when Troy Deeney smashed that guy right at the end. That was the only thing that felt like a derby. But that was perfect for Watford. It was, so I don't think they will make that mistake again. And whilst there are no supporters there, you know, it is a very, very different atmosphere. It's a very different ground. A lot of these Watford players won't have seen anything quite like it. You know, I'm sure they're not probably allowed to use the away dressing room, so they'll probably be getting changed in, I don't know, a conference room. What's that, a conference room, I'm calling it? It's going to be a blooming porter cabin, isn't it, basically?
it'll be one of those double glazing salesman things on the side of the pitch.
So
they're executive boxes.
It is a very, very tricky afternoon. But I'm, you know, I'm the same as Jason. I am desperate for us to win it. A, because it's Luton. It's been there. It's sort of been hovering in our line of sight amidst, you know, amongst these. We've talked about the games that to come against Reading tonight. We've dealt with them. Brentford, Norwich and Swansea all on the horizon. But as challenges. But in there, right slap bang in the middle, right in our eye line, just like the sun going down on as you drive on the M25 home and a lovely summer's evening, just annoying you, just in the corner there, has been Luton Town. And they've been there for a long time. We've known that they were going to be, we were going to be playing at this time of the season, all season. And we've hoped that it was going to be a pivotal and integral match. And it will be, one way or the other. We still need the points to get up. There's no, you know, let's not get too carried away. We need to win games to get promoted. And this is our next opportunity to do it. So I really hope, I no doubt that our boys will be fired up. You know, Troy Deeney playing a part in the team. There's plenty of other people around the place who will be making sure that everyone understands exactly what this means for us as supporters and what it means in terms of our ongoing promotion push. It's a colossal game. You know, I say it every week now, but every game is the next massive one, because it's just so important for this football club to get promoted. And we have to be professional, you know, slightly over-egging the pudding a little bit. But as a supporter, I want us to go there and sort them out. Nothing would give me greater glee than to know that Luton fans have to put up with us bouncing down for a season. They didn't even get to see us play because there's no one, it was all behind closed doors. And before they even realised what happened, we're back up in the Premier League, lording it on Match of the Day while they have to find out where Quest is on their planner. So that appeals to me. That appeals to me greatly. But we've got to be professional. There were times tonight where, you know, it felt like there could be a little flashpoint. Reading knew what they were doing. They knew Watford were up against the pump, and there were a bit of verbals and a few little flicks here and there. Let's not get sucked into that. Let's be professional. Let's do the job. Let's be Watford. Let's rise above it. Sort them out. On we go.
And of course, there'll be a podcast to see exactly how Mike feels after that game next weekend. Thank you very much for your time, Michael.
Not at all. Thank you for having me. Thank you for putting up with me. And well done, Watford. I thought that was a real game of two halves. And I thought they had to show professionalism, determination and no little talent. And we saw it all there tonight. So well done, you golden boys. I'll sleep well tonight.
Thank you, Jason.
Thank you.
And thank you, Colin.
Best performance of the season for me, and also best opposition. So well done, you lovely, beautiful golden boys.
And the golden boys go on. 5 games to go. Let's see what happens next.
The Athletic.